And welcome to the Hear Me Media Podcast. I am a dime store angel of death, and I'm joined by Frank. Frank, how are you doing?
Hello, Leon. If anything, I am politics everywhere politics. That's a good way to define myself today and every day.
And we have a very ambitious episode on our hands. We have a video game, but we also have ideas and politics. Everywhere, as Frank has already pointed out.
Yay.
So we are going to try and navigate a couple of things in this episode. This episode is about bad video games. Video games that are very naughty. Video games that aren't very good. And why? What's that all about? It's motivated by this idea that I have... sorry, Frank. That we have seen online quite a bit by... The coming and going of last year of great legends such as Gollum and Kong Island or whatever the fuck that's called. Skull Island? King Kong? Skull? I don't care. I don't know. I don't care.
Who knows?
Anyway, those bad games, right? And this I saw was like triggering a wave of despondent brattling about about what is bad games? What is, huh? What is that? And we thought, hey, let's give our two cents. But more importantly, despite how philosophical and language trademark of an episode this might be, it's the main aim is to inventorize for you, dear listener, and for us as well. What do we mean when we say bad video games? Or what is bad? What's bad? What makes the video game bad? And what is a video game? And how do those things talk to each other? How is that communicating with each other? So that's the vague idea. We're going to try and make a lot less vague throughout this episode.
Best we can.
Yeah, the best we can. and we are also going to talk about a very interesting video game that's taking us to Brazil. Yeah.
Oh boy.
You want to do the honors? Since
The main vehicle that will help us convey some of the points we're making, aside from the previous episode, which was Cyberpunk 2077, is an even more poignant example, which also comes from the various texts and essays Leon's been writing for the pod on Patreon, so check those out. They're open for everyone. On Grand Theft Auto, it's Rockstar's Max Payne 3, set in Brazil, supposedly. Kinda.
Well, it is Brazil. It's this beautiful simulacrum of Brazil, if anything. or is it? I don't know. We'll get into that, but... yeah, so I would say this is also an attempt to bundle some things we have all been, well, Frank and I, all of us, all two people, have been talking about on this podcast. And I would say, like, it has some hyper-competent man stuff in there. It has some, like, what I like to call, like, hatefulness in there as well, offensiveness, and the things that I've been, like, pouring into the GTA, the two GTA texts, I believe. I've only wrote two of them.
Yeah.
I think.
Think so.
The plan was to do one in between those two texts, but I kind of lost the window for that. And at the same time, I just kind of amalgamated it into the third one. So the third one is like kind of two and three at the same time. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's that's not going to make anything more clear. But I'm sorry for that. But at the same time, this is a text that I was a lot more happy with. Anyway, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot better. Other one, it was a lot more focused onto the UK and American relation. And I was going to write it when the UK was going through its election crisis, if we can call it thus, with Liz Truss and all that. but that would have just been, like, I don't know, kind of generic commentary on things that are going on, which is still fine. But I like the conceptualization of the third text. Which is the second text. There you go. I hope that clears things up. You're welcome. In all seriousness, it's that, but it's also maybe a little bit what we have also been talking about on the silliness text that Frank wrote, I would say. It's like, how do we navigate these quite intense feelings and messaging and settings that are injected into well, it's video games or whatever, really, any form of art, and how Sydney can relate to that. That type of thinking is also present here, so it's a very beautiful distillation, I would like to hope and suggest, from what all we have been doing. Like, it's all been worth it. All that prattling, all that yammering that you thought we were doing, it was actually all planned. Don't worry about it. Don't ask any follow-up questions. So yeah, that's our today's episode. And like I said earlier, this game is set in Brazil, and it's interesting because we are both from two countries that everybody knows, kind of, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But oddly enough, we don't have a lot of video games set in either of our countries, which you happen to know some that are set in Brazil besides this.
I mean, you asked me this question before, and the only other coherent answer I could give was Assassin's Creed 3 having a short Desmond Miles Brazil section, which is tiny, and features no genuine Brazilian Portuguese dialogue, that's for sure. So
it's just Portuguese, or
it's barely Portuguese. It's baffling. I've never heard any Portuguese like that, and I've heard a variety of different accents, from I think Angola and Mozambique, but never heard that. So I don't know. Go figure. It's just bad. It's badness. But yeah. Do you know any set in Netherlands and or Brazil?
Well, the fun thing is that we do have some overlap in video games that are quote-unquote set.
Oh, no.
In Brazil and Netherlands. And that's a specific sort of game. Sports games.
Oh, of course.
There's a lot of sports games set in... but then again, that's not a setting, right? That's just... Like, for instance, I believe Formula One is very big in both of our countries.
Yeah, definitely.
We both have very... Like, within that, I don't watch it, so I'm sorry if I'm wrong to listen, but it's Formula One, so I don't know. It's whatever. It's the car goes meow. We both have apparently very well-known racetracks in either of our countries.
True.
So the Netherlands and Brazil are like, the Dutch one is called Zandvoort. I know that because my dad likes that sort of stuff, which is why I probably don't like it. It's also like 57 rounds. Like, you just kind of see them
long
going in a loop. Yeah, it's like if it was 10, my attention span as a ADHD youth would have probably liked it a lot better. But yeah, you're just kind of supposed to watch that, the entire thing, and then only the last three rounds are interesting. I can't watch that. And people say football is long. Like, no, Christ. At least something is happening. Anyway, moving on. So sorry, dear listener. But yeah, ironically, football is also very popular in both of our countries. And there's a lot of FIFAs with like Dutch and Brazilian stadiums, of course, because of that.
Of course.
Yeah, the more you know, this is not very interesting. But yeah, so those two games are games that are apparently very are games that have Dutch and Brazilian levels into them.
Mm-hmm.
A fun side note, because I googled it and I got a very poorly maintained Wikipedia page on a game set in Netherlands, and apparently in one of the older Hitman franchises games. I mean, there's a Amsterdam level or like a level in Netherlands. I don't know about it, but it's very interesting. But yeah, the only time I really had a conscious memory of the Netherlands being depicted in video games has been in the latest Call of Duty games. We have them in Cold War. I don't know what year. Yeah, they've been depicted in the Cold War game. Then also in Modern Warfare 2, I want to say. And maybe there's also the same map in Warzone, which is interesting. I only played the Cold War 1 because it was free on PlayStation Plus. And I was like, I know it had an Amsterdam level in it. So not just any Netherlands location. It's always Amsterdam because, of course, it is. And because that's the only city Americans know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they do have Dutch people in there, because funnily enough, despite our countries being so disproportionate in size from each other, it does have some odd similarities, namely that with, in my experience, you have like, if there are some Brazilians or Portuguese people, they kind of just have a Spanish-speaking person try the Portuguese, and it doesn't sound great at all, which is something that we have seen in this video game of Max Payne 3.
Oh, yeah.
And when a Dutch person show up, they just make an English person try to speak German and think that's Dutch. So we are both quite insulted in this way. we're not treated very well. So that's once again a funny little comparison there. But it's people also don't understand Dutch or Portuguese, I think. People understand sort of kind of German and Spanish, but like Portuguese and Dutch are just weird and wrong in so many ways. So it's, and maybe they're right, but you know, they don't know enough to make that judgment. So shut up. Which is also so baffling to me, because especially for like the German Dutch thing, like there's so many of us speaking English.
Yeah.
So you can just tell us to speak Dutch and we will speak Dutch. It's fine. I can't imagine we are like that much more expensive. Anyway, never mind. My point being is that is, despite Aslan looking quite beautiful in those games, because the engine that, you know, depicts the Call of Duty games is quite impressive or whatever. And also they have like a large crunched out division of people working on those games every second, because Activision is the worst alongside with every other big gaming company ever. It's or should I say subsidiary 7 of Microsoft, I don't know, you pick. But my point being here is that Amsterdam is depicted beautifully but also insanely stupid in a way that you have this, of course, it's in that part of Amsterdam as well, everybody knows, the one with the houses and canals. Amsterdam is much larger than that, but oh well. And it doesn't exit this pittoresque, as we call it, scenery. It's really funny as well in the Modern Warfare 2 one. You have the new Modern Warfare 2, by the way, because they have two Modern Warfare 2s. Go fuck themselves. They can go fuck themselves. If they're not going to be clear, then we're not going to be clear either. They can deal. So in the latest Modern Warfare 2, I will say, you can literally go to like the Outer Kerk, which is like literally just means old church, I believe, or it's the new church. I forgot. Anyway, not important, but I used to go to school literally one street away from that. So for me, that was a very intimate, it's also very close to Anne Frank's house, and what we like to call the gay monument, because we place a gay monument right in front of a church. And because nice. Because we used to be cool like that, not really anymore, but that's not another. Anyway, my point being, it's really fun to see like the street that I used to walk daily. So but then again, it immediately stops because you're looking for a terrorist. And right. I'm sorry to take so much time complaining about this, because you have a lot more to complain about, my dear friends. So I will stop. I'll cap it off right now. I'm so sorry, Frank.
I mean, fair. And it's interesting in terms of the comparison, because like I'm going to be brief, because honestly, like this isn't the worst part of the game. It isn't like the stuff that makes it that bad, but it is almost to the point that, you know, the Brazil in Max Payne 3, there's no real comparison. Like, it's vaguely there, but there's no real, oh, this street or this neighborhood or this area. It's all like, oh, it's this fake name, which could be, but isn't. So it's not real locations, if that makes any sense, which is fairly frustrating, because you do not get that identification. It reminds me a couple of years ago when a YouTuber I liked was playing a Watch Dogs Legion, and it's portrayal of London, and it's like, oh, this place and this place. Oh, I recognize this. And, you know, having that sense of like, oh, why is it cool to represent certain places in a video game? It is this point of connection. But this isn't the case. Any portrayal of supposedly São Paulo in Max Payne 3 is done for reasons which starts to escape me the more I try to think about it. Because is it São Paulo? It's more Rio, but also not fully Rio. So it's kind of mixed between Rio and São Paulo because apparently they don't care and don't know anything. So, and it's all these vague allusions and stuff that could be real, but actually isn't. So to the very point that the football team that they use, fictional one, that they make up for in the game, is not a Portuguese word. It's Galatians, which works in English, but no fucking way would a team be called that. You could, if you want to make a reference to the actual Galatians, the ancient peoples referred to, you know, in letters to Galatians and whatnot, they would be the Portuguese word, Galatas. So, you know, it's like so little effort. And at other times, it's like, okay, it feels like there's something here, but there isn't. It feels like, oh, let's call it Brazil because we can and use some Portuguese. And oh, we got a best setting of all, a favela. So let's shoot some black and brown people for the fun of it.
Interesting. I'm just reminded that the original Modern Warfare 2 didn't have a Dutch level, but did have a Rio de Janeiro level where you shoot people in favelas.
Yeah, I remember that as I was saying this. I'd forgotten about it before, too. how interesting, isn't it? How fucking terrible.
What reminds me of what you were saying, like two things. Mm-hmm. First was... the depiction of Amsterdam is the genuine one, but in their simplicity, it was what you could call admirative, as in it's very shallow because it's, once again, it's just a very small, relatively small neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's very zoomed in.
Right.
It's also, once again, conjoining with this presupposed idea of Amsterdam, an idyllic version that can be found sort of, kind of, but then also immediately stops because the city stops. Like, it goes off into other parts of the city. And because it's a city. What it could be a way to make maybe Americans understand a little bit better, it's like going to... the way Americans go to Amsterdam is like if I went to New York City and expected everything to look like Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Times Square
Garden? Yeah, Times Square.
Times Square. And... the one with all the ads and stuff.
Yeah.
And the red, like, staircase or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's Madison Square Garden is the sports arena, I believe. But anyway, my point being is that it's like I expected everything to be like that. Or going to like Hong Kong and expecting everything to look like the skyscraper district. But, you know, sadly, there's a really large city with really poor living conditions slapped around it. And so... I hope that gives you like kind of an idea that not everything looks like those canals. Although I would say proportionately, we do have a larger part of those canals throughout Amsterdam and comparatively to, once again, Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, but just to give you an idea, that's usually my experience with Americans. But sorry, this is all to say, I'm sorry, Frank, is that the depiction of Amsterdam is still a somewhat positive one, although not sincere and almost sensationalized, idealized expectations of for Americans or people who like to visit Amsterdam. Whereas Brazil, in this case, and in, I would say in the larger video game sense, is not good.
I would say that Call of Duty does not care enough about the Netherlands to have a strong opinion about it, other than it's like, it's probably a cool place. Whereas, you know, if we think in terms of the worst possible visions of Brazil and Latin America, it's a, hey, look at that shithole.
Yeah, it becomes an arena in which you can unleash your righteous Western white man fury onto the populace. Because it's shithole anyway, so you don't really have to feel bad for blowing up the place, right? Because there's no difference between it. And sure, the Americans like to talk about Detroit in the same way, but then again, Detroit, despite its national struggle and so forth and so on, does not have carrying it alongside it centuries of imperialism and colonialism. So that I don't think that comparison holds up very well. But anyway, this is all to say, I believe there's also a Street Fighter level in Brazil, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, and then there's the character, Blanca.
Yeah, Blanca, right. So, there you go. I believe there's an Overwatch character that's Dutch. I don't think we have a lot of Dutch characters as well, which is fine by me. I don't need them. I think Americans should think of the Netherlands as little as possible. That's my desire. anyway, sorry. But there's also a hotel map in Call of Duty as well. Like, we have a well-known hotel. Yeah, that's whatever. Sure, a place, a multinational owned hotel. Sure, that's something, I guess. You have this chase along the rooftops of Amsterdam, which is not something that would ever happen. First off, they don't flow over into each other as well as this game thinks it does. It doesn't. And the Dutch that is spoken as well in this game is nonsensical.
Eesh.
It's gibberish. But they are, so it's not like it's not fake words. They say real words, they just don't make sense, which is a choice that baffles me. I don't know why it's there. Like, he starts talking about like little Dutch snacks, and then about drinking, and then about like someone being crazy. Like that was baffling to me. I found out that was like such a nonsensical choice that just, I don't know, once again baffled me, I guess. I don't know. At least the Brazilian, I suppose, as poorly as it's spoken in Max Payne 3, is at least plot focused Brazilian.
It also varies. Know. There are moments where it's better and moments where it's clearly not Portuguese, or clearly not anyone who speaks Portuguese, whatever variant it might be. Yeah, it just... I have mixed feelings about it, because sometimes it's like, okay, this isn't as bad. There's a reasonable attention to detail. This kind of works. But the overall broad sense is like, it's terrible and just... I mean, the problem, and I'll try and use this as a transition point to get into like bad games and... Why I revile Max Payne 3, regardless of anything else that it might do or it might create or offer. There's a point of contact that, like, I cannot get over this, because this makes this game terrible, regardless of everything else, mechanic or otherwise. And to me, it is the relatively simple fact of, you know, you spend a lot part of the game shooting poor black and brown people because they're criminals, kill them, and you literally climb and kill your way up a favela because you're the big bad American cop hero. And I know this is vile, this is evil, this is terrible. I don't like to moralize these things all that much, but crosses a fucking line, I feel. It's not just, you know, a poor portrayal. Well, yes, it is, but it goes more than that. It portrays something which is abominable in a way that does not recognize that. It's like, you know, this is merely a gameplay function. It is committing horrible murders for the sake of making the game a game, and I can't fucking process that still.
Yeah, it's so, but what is interesting about it and why I spent so much time talking about like the setting is to indicate what's bothering us and why it's maybe necessary to build some language around this.
Yeah,
it's interesting because also what we said earlier about like the coming and going of very poorly optimized games and so forth and so on, like, oh, just bad games, and like this recent introduction, this very recent, this time of recording, introduction of games as a service, like the failing of Skull and Bones, and I believe Suicide Squad is also doing terribly at the moment. So, you know, these are also then bad games, but this is all just bad games. And I was like, maybe we can like try and navigate this a little bit, because the Suicide Squad bad is not Max Payne bad.
Yes, and it isn't.
And so forth and so on. And the Call of Duty bad is a lot closer to Max Payne bad, but also maybe a little bit different, as we have just established. And that's going to be a bit difficult because of that. People tend to, once again, this is my observation. You can disagree with this. But based on my observation, I think people are very, as always, very eager to look at the immediate elements of the thing, of the text, of the game, of the piece of art, piece of media, whatever you want me to call it. I don't know. But I'm probably going to call it art. I'm going to focus, because of that, a little bit too much on games. But this is going to be about art as well, and how I approach art. And we are going to have a problem of scope here a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to try and guide us through it. But also understand that this is going to be us witnessing the outskirts of it. This is not going to be like, oh, well, this is the definition done. Call it a day. No, this is going to be the first step in this process. And because of that, I wanted to focus a little bit about, but like I said, the eagerness to focus on what's there. So we have a very passionate group of people online that are willing to tear apart anything that doesn't run well, and it's not like, you know, it's like a bit clunky here and there, or runs very badly. And like a golem once again, and is then like publicly ritually sacrificed. I would say, like even though I think you and I and Holly, your dear friend Holly, did it more responsibly, as in we privately played a game and had like a fun little time. And I don't personally enjoy this this spectacle of like, look how bad is like a popular streamer going through the game and like having that experience with a whole group of people. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying I don't enjoy it. I don't really care for it. Because it's simple. It's so simple. It's almost banal a little bit to me. But once again, this is my personal opinion. So this is all to say that I think I'm just going to mention that there's a simple aspect of it, and that's good. That does contribute to badness, which is the technical. And I'm just going to keep calling it technical, because I think that's the best word for it. With this, I would say this constitutes the the frames not framing, the user interface not interfacing, all the things you would say, the data sets not loading, like, you know, the usual suspects, if you will. To me, this is it being released is the badness. The fact that it is in this state, up to me, is not that big of a problem, or is not the problem, rather.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, just trying to add how I feel about it and how we've been discussing it to this point. That there's a... Broadly, we're going to be talking about what the games, or the game, in the case of Max Payne 3, sort of conveys. As a whole, right, in terms of story, narrative, and even mechanics to a point. But there is this separate but joint category of, like, as you're putting it, the technical, which includes the game, the gameplay aspect of it, which leads to the point of, like, a game can be mechanically and technically competent, yet still be, by the way we're going to define it, terrible, bad, and horrific. And that is a thing, right? Like, the game not functioning, not accomplishing its mechanical and technical promises or intents or objectives. And there is its broad message or effect and affect as text. So we're going to be talking about the text and this aspect more, because it's the easier one to broadly talk about, and the consequences that the mechanic and the technical has upon it, rather than the separate aspect of like, oh, this game does this and that. Is this good? Is this bad? That's going to vary, right? Because a strategy game doing X or Y is going to be different than a shooty action game doing this equal but distinct X and Y. So, yeah, there's just a caveat I wanted to add, because that was something I was thinking about before recording, which is Max Payne 3 as a game is reasonably competent. Reasonably. And yet, there's a lot more to it, which is why it makes it detestable to me.
Yeah. I think that's indeed very interesting. To me, I don't think it's that competent. To me, it's whatever. It's mm-hmm. its mechanics are like a solid 6 for me. It's playable. There you go. But exactly what you're saying, for yeah. me, the way I'm going to try in a minute to talk about badness is a way... The way that badness functions is that it emanates into the game from an abstract point. And therefore, I don't like this word, but contaminates it a little bit. And like, it blocks out my potential enjoyment, even if the mechanics were good, even if the technical was good. I don't think the technical of this game is bad.
Yeah, but, exactly.
I don't think, but it, therefore, this, to me, shows the power of the more conceptual badness that this game could not have overcome, whereas the technical badness of, well, once again, a Golem, for instance, could have been fixed.
Yeah.
And the badness of Max Payne could have also been fixed, but this could have been fixed in a way in which Max Payne 3 is no longer recognizably Max Payne 3.
Yes, yes,
and
yes, yes.
This is... This is my main issue with how we are going to navigate badness. I am not that interested in... I find it very interesting how, once again, how game coding works, for instance. Mm-hmm. But it's not my forte.
Yeah, sadly. Mine neither.
Once again, would love to have someone on who knows a lot about that and teaches about that.
Reach us out.
Yeah, by all means. But, I heard, like, lovely stories about how, like... how grass can move in engines and how every step is coded wrong, therefore makes the game unplayable, and changing one line of code fixes the entire game. Like, those
incredible.
Are beautiful stories and very interesting.
Incredible.
Yeah, very interesting ways to think about video games as well as pieces of art. But once again, to focus a bit more on the conceptual. And we do have a challenge here because, well, what does bad mean? Isn't that too subjective? Sure, but I still think this subjectiveness can be navigated in such a way that isn't just, well, that's just your opinion, dude. I think there's a more broader theoretical framework to be engaged with here.
Yeah.
And I would like to start off here with precisely doing a very cowardly thing.
Can I add one thing before you properly get into it? Because I think it's significant because you mentioned Golem. Golem is incompetent. It does not achieve anything that it is trying to convey in terms of story, in terms of mechanics. It fails as a cultural product or a cultural object. Max Payne,
Didn't you like the bird, Frank?
Fuck the bird.
Sorry.
Anyway, I don't care enough.
Sorry.
Max Payne, on the other hand, I think it is successful in what it's doing. It is reasonably competent, right? Like, everything that it is doing, it does. But all that it is doing is terrible. it's a point. Like, the mechanics aren't bad. They're 6, maybe a 7 even. But there's something more there in that what it is achieving as a whole is a terrible thing. And that's one of the ways that Leon's going to approach it with very set of useful categories for us all.
Yeah, no, I thought about how the fuck do I then theoretically define badness, which is a task way beyond my scope.
It's a hell of a philosophical question there.
Precisely. So I thought, well, what I can do is try and have a conversation with myself on what is good. And therefore, we categorize badness as a inversion of goodness. I hope that makes sense. if not, don't worry about it too much. But I think we can identify badness by, once again, by dint of negative example, which is ironically a positive example. Anyway, don't worry about it. By negative example of a good game, as in what a good game isn't. And I thought to myself, okay, well, video games then is too specified a category. And especially when we talk about how Max Payne could have been a good game, but then wouldn't be recognizably Max Payne 3.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to say Max Payne and Max Payne 3 interchangeably. We will talk maybe about 1 and 2 by Remedy in another episode. I haven't played those games in fucking forever. So full disclosure, only talk about Max Payne 3 here by Rockstar, not by Remedy. Anyway, moving on. So, but for me, good art, a lot of people say, like, oh, well, it makes you feel something. And I'm like, sure. I would like to say that that's not enough. The art, in this case, so the art is going to be the most zoomed out thing I'm going to be talking about. And I'm going to try and zoom in to video games, which are art. Don't worry about it. So for me, good art is not just something that makes me feel something, but it has to communicate something. It has to commune something into my spirit, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It has to, not just the feeling, but a more broader dialogue needs to take place here. And I would like to conceptualize this in a more postmodern sense than I usually do. I think, at least. But that this is not just, if it's communication, then it's authorial intent, right? Authorial sense, sorry. So it's just that, right? And I'm like, well, no, not really. If this dialogue, this communication exists, I'm sorry if this is difficult to follow, but doesn't exist necessarily wholeheartedly within me or wholeheartedly within the object, but rather within the process of talking to each other between me and the cultural object.
Yeah.
And this conversation, this, once again, the things talking to each other, I talked a little bit about this on the Left Page episode. I don't know the number, but the Tragedy of Black Tom, if that's the one.
Ballad of Black Tom.
Talk a little bit about how the ballad, thank you. The Ballad of Black Tom and how like social processes can be defined as things talking to each other. I'm using kind of the same framework here. And for me, that makes a thing good. Like, is it trying to communicate something? Is there a conversation that is being held here? And this doesn't, once again, have to be a literal conversation, but rather just more than just feelings, because we can all feel something,
yeah.
I think, at least. This is not that impressive. I will take it if nothing else is on this on display. And the absence of even feeling something, that's even worse, I would say.
Yeah.
I believe we recently talked about this as well. I believe on the Cyberpunk episode, but I'm not quite sure.
I think so.
And I think what makes good art, great art, is when we take this conversation, this dialogue, and try to elevate the notions we are trying to communicate. And because this constitutes to me, at least, or at least in my conceptualization, constitutes to me how a sincere interaction with the medium and genre. Mm. And also with, like, once again, as we've talked about and we've praised a lot in this podcast, the sincerity of interaction, which is also very important to us personally.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine, and this is something that I've been so frustrated about and what the text on the post that I made about GTA frustrates me to no end, is frustrating to me to no end, because it doesn't believe in anything. I think, like, it's just hate. It's only that, and even that, it doesn't interact with sincerely, mm-hmm. or in an interesting way. And sincereness, once again, is not the end all be all.
No,
but it at least facilitates an interesting way of communicating. It's a good beginning point. Let's just say that. So, but this is all to say, I'm so sorry, but the scary part is over, dear listener, I think. This generates a feeling towards what is good, And when this is absent, I would say that's bad. And the ways it can be absent can be manifested in two different categories. More than two, I would say. But two different categories. Let's start with the two different categories here. And I would like to call them the offensive and ineffective. Frank, you've already talked a little bit about the offensiveness, but is there anything you want to like pile on top of that?
Well, I think the offensive is, well, I don't think so, because it is broadly that point of, I'm asking myself whether I want to get into a specific point, but I might as well. I think it's worth it. Like, it is...
I've been talking for too long, so you have to. I'm sorry.
It is broadly the sense that, you know, there are things we believe, right? There are things we stand for and things that we should not have to justify our defense of. And thus, I think it is, you know, it's like, oh, but is this really offensive? Is this not? I don't care. I think it is the point that we have, you know, as broadly left-leaning, you know, communists, anarchists, and so on, have a general understanding of, like, you know, this is fucking terrible. This is horrific. This is monstrous. This is abominable. So I think that's where it is this shared political, social, cultural belief that marks this stuff as offensive, right? Like, I think that, you know, you could have an argument about it or whatever, but I don't think that's generally interesting. I feel like broadly it's like, you know, there are things we stand for, and certain things that are against them, not all of them, but certain specific ones, are monstrous and offensive in that sense. So I think that is one way to think about it. And that point about hatred or nothingness or violence and racism, you know, all that is easier to categorize as the offensive. I think the offensive is the easy one, and the ineffective one is the trickier of the sort, because then you're talking about not quite, but similar to that point about competency.
For me, and why I'm eager to conceptualize it as thus, I would say that the what makes it bad, or when we talk about badness, to me, that sits in the at the intersection of the of deontology and ontological, as in there is, you know, I'm so sorry to talk about deontological stuff, but which is not the opposite of each other. I know that the way, especially that I'm saying it, I'm not Francis Fukuyama. I don't think deontological is the opposite of ontological, but that's not it's Christ, that man. Anyway, so what I mean with that is that there's indeed a moral element of it, but I think despite the subjective moral element, there is also just a more ontological sense of art here at play.
Mm-hmm.
And the object is then sitting in between those two things, as in a way to approach it. Art always makes us feel something, but has rather, if you are sincere about it, you embrace the obligation to elevate these notions that you are interested in putting into your art. And it is then fine if you only come halfway and like don't make it all the way, but there needs to be this sincere attempt at understanding the tradition you're partaking in,
mm-hmm.
which is a more... this is a more established thing. This is not just a subjective thing. We can all acknowledge that we are participating in traditions when we create art.
Yeah,
everything is like, not everything is an imitation of each other, but there's a strong sense of things being derived from each other. There's no such thing as, you know, isolation. There's no vacuum here. There's only the ongoing onslaught of art, if you will. It's and to then distance ourselves from like this type of John Stuart Mill type thinking, you know, this utilitarianism of like this arithmetic of good art is 5 points and bad art is 2 points, like, you know, that horrible way of thinking.
Yeah.
it is not that, but there is a good attitude towards sincerely partaking in that tradition. And I do think it's ineffective and potentially, ironically, even though I said there are two different categories, also offensive a little bit when you do this. But mainly it just renders your art ineffective, I think, when we don't do this. And of course, this is all very much set in my personal subjective experience. Yet, I would argue, we have all experienced the broader tradition of art.
Yeah.
So this is where this where it sits into both objective and subjective, I would say, a little bit. But anyway, then the game itself, but the ineffective and offensiveness are like shrouded around it, or the object sits in between like the pincer, with one prong being offensive and the other prong being ineffectiveness.
Yeah.
And then to, once again, zoom back in to the object that is Max Payne 3, for instance. This once again, is also a very hateful game that is offensive for the very clear purposelessness of like this horrible barrage of slaughter of black and brown people in Brazil. And it's also that which makes it, no matter how good the game could have been, this prong then of the conceptual pincer emanates into the game this offensiveness, which to me, and this is admittedly the very subjective part, but blocks out any kind of enjoyment I could have had from any technical, mechanical elements of the game.
Yes.
Even if the dialogue was amazingly written, this type of offensiveness blocks it there, blocks out every kind of positive thing, that means it kind of talks at the same time in an ineffective way, despite ineffective earlier on being conceptualized as a separate thing. There is, to me, always the ineffectiveness, but there could also be, that this is more optional, the offensiveness. But if both are the case, we are talking about what I would say is just unanimously bad.
Yeah.
So when both those things are at play, when, like, you know, you exist between the two points of this illustrated pincer, then to me, that's when we enter badness, like badness trademark, if you will. So so that's how I see things. I don't know how you feel about it all.
No, that makes a lot amount of sense, right? And I'm going to bring some stuff to it, right? Because there's an argument to, like, how can you, and if you can, properly portray offensiveness in a video game. Think of Spec Ops The Line, which also does that, but in a more interesting way, or a way that I need to play it. I'm going to confess that I still need to play it, although I know most about it.
I mean, it's on our docket for playing game, for the anyway, games that we played together.
Anyway,
but sorry, go on.
Moving swiftly on, whether it gets away with it, right? Like with portraying offensiveness and you playing through that, but still being a game. From what I know of it, I think it can get away with it more than other stuff, but you could argue against it, and with good reason. But the point is, and I feel like that's a big part of it, right? Like, the game is aware that this is offensive, right? That this is vile. And thus, the object, the cultural object, isn't necessarily offensive, but what is being portrayed or even played is. So that is something to be noted. Whereas in Max Payne, the offensive is the gameplay, in the most banal sense, right? It isn't supposed to, it doesn't mean anything. It's not like, oh, Max becoming a monster or becoming horrible. It's like, no, it's Max doing what he needs to do, going for his mission and whatever, and just, like, the game doesn't even care. They're not people, they're enemies that you need to kill and move swiftly on. Oh, but what about, hey, who cares, moving swiftly on. And that is pretty, I can't get over it, right? And there's something to be said about, as Leon was putting, in terms of like this blotting out any other supposed benefit or reading from it. I feel like that's notable because, and here's some context for you. one of the big ideas for us to talk about Max Payne 3 was a podcast Leon recommended called Something Rotten, with, you might know him, Jacob Geller.
And Blake Hester.
Oh, thank you. And
no problem. Also a games journalist, I'm sorry. Go on.
Of course. And they talk about games that, you know, that they're calling rotten, right? That have like these... I've only listened to the Max Payne episodes they've done, so I need to listen to the others to see like this guiding thread of like what is this rotten aspect of these video games, like this dark, violent, brutal, horrible portrayals or whatever. And, you know, they draw out a lot of interesting analysis about stuff in Max Payne 3 about certain conceptualizations of alcoholism and that kind of violence and how that affects a person or their relationship to the world. And some of those readings I find quite compelling. However, I still can't get over the fact of it being a boring old gameplay loop that you kill poor black and brown people. To the point where it's like, yeah, that's interesting. In no way does that redeem Max Payne 3. Max Payne 3, I think, is so objectively terrible because of its offensiveness and ineffectiveness, in the sense that that offensiveness doesn't mean anything and the game doesn't really believe in anything. And we'll get into some more about that in a minute. But to the point where any other reading or any other things like, yeah, you know, this is a thing. And yet, it feels like it can't. It can't overcome the... Gonna use this term again, it's not good, but the evilness that this game has, or contains, or is. And it's just... It might be a limitation of mine. I'm not gonna get over the point where it's like, I am just frustrated because I think this game is irredeemable in any way. But regardless of that, I do think that there is something that this game does which is horrific, which renders everything else accidental. Accidentally positive, accidentally interesting, because it as a full product barely has anything good to it. It is offensive and ineffective in a dreadful combination. Sorry, I had to get that out of my chest.
No, but I definitely want to go there, actually, if that's okay with you.
Of course.
I've just decided to like workshop my notes into a text, so that this whole thing that I'm trying to talk about, the relationship of offensiveness and ineffectiveness, can just be found on our Patreon, because I think that's smart. So otherwise, I'll just spend the rest of this episode talking, trying to make this clear. When I just look at my notes and it's like, oh, I said that a lot more succinctly than I just did while recording. So, but I do want to talk about Max Payne a bit more, also as a forerunner for a more, once again, text-heavy explanation that I'll later on, somewhere this month, no promises, dear listener, put on the Patreon as well. Mm-hmm. So to talk a little bit why I think it's offensive. And I'm not saying that that is the right way of of approaching the offensiveness. Rather, my whole point is that your realization of offensiveness is one that I share, I agree with as well.
Yeah.
But my navigation of offensiveness is slightly different, or rather not different, but an addendum to exactly what you're saying.
I see.
And also how this game, to me, in my opinion, doesn't believe in anything, just like GTA 4.
Yeah.
And I think that is because when I was playing through it, and Frank, I was streaming it to Frank as we were making our way through this game. Max, the main character, and this is a hell of a sentence, and I'm so sorry. Putting aside for a moment the cop, imperialist, genocidal, extremely racist depictions of this game, maybe exactly don't do that, but keep that close to your mind then. I would say on top of all of that, Max never learns any kind of particular morality from this ordeal.
No,
there's this idea then, like, well, he shouldn't write, because otherwise the deaths of black and brown people are like the bargaining chip for this gained knowledge. And I think, well, okay, this is then where we should have depicted a societal change, a more sociological, once again, not only sociological, but a extra dimension that is interwoven in the game that has a social character. This is totally absent.
Yeah.
Max, so just real quick, dear listener, the identification of Max Payne is he shoots good and drinks and uses a whole lot of drugs. Not your generic, like, cocaine or whatever, but, like, a lot of pills. Like, you know, like, pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah.
And we have this moment that threatens to be threat-bare meaningful, where he stops drinking and also quits his job, sort of, kind of, and, like, but it's too bad because that's contaminated by him being a cop and going outside the law. So, once again, terrible setting, conceptually bad, therefore a bad game. Once again, not sincerely interacting with any tradition, which makes it bad and ineffective. But forget all that for a second. Funnily enough, how does the game end? Well, it ends with Max Payne being stained with blood and gunpowder and shooting up an international airport. And then he starts, it's all good. He watches the news after that and starts drinking again. So there's nothing. This is almost so bereft of any meaning that I'm left calling it, like, what? Childish? Cowardly? Something equally insulting? I don't know. This is a game that is almost hostile towards meaningfulness.
Yes.
And a very interesting object because of that, but not good. And I think this is what the podcast that I do enjoy, Something Rotten, as Frank mentioned, even though I do not at all agree with them on this, because they do have a very unfortunate sentence that you point out, Frank, where it's like, oh yeah, he kills a lot of minorities, but, and like, and you very saliently said to me, like, well, there is no but. There's no but after that. You don't get to but that. That's just, no. And that's what I've been trying to very conceptually trying to put into words. This is the moment for me, that, thanks to you, because you put it so succinctly, is then theorized as the offensiveness emanating so strongly into the game that it blocks out any meaningful enjoyment.
Yeah, exactly. And,
yeah. So, this is all... There's nothing there. There's only hate. Hate is the only thing Rockstar sells in GTA 4 and Max Payne 3, which is like, it purposely denies itself, like I said, the social thinking.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. That's wild that you look at it and think this is good, and Something Rotten might think, oh, well, that's what makes it interesting. Like, no, it's just what makes it bad, I think. And the fact that it is bad, that is interesting to me. But the game itself is meh.
To their credit, I don't think they're as flippant about it as you put it. But it is, it feels to me as strongly as that. It's like, with, like, nothing can save this game. This game is condemned. In a way that, sure, this might be interesting or this might be interesting, but the final conclusion must irrevocably be, this is fucking terrible. And if it isn't, it will be frustrating, because what you're doing then is putting aside, in a way that I don't respect, don't appreciate, something which, again, affects the whole object, right? Like, it's so overbearing upon it to the point where it's like, I can't. I can't. I have to walk away. Have to stop. It is that intense to me, because it isn't. It isn't like, oh, but there's a justification. No. It is pure gameplay element with pretty much zero reflection. And it's like, oh, but they're also suffering or whatever. Well, yeah, but you're still the cop and you're going to shoot up the favela. Was that your intention?
Yeah.
No, but don't kid yourself. So it's difficult for me to articulate, but it is... This is a product to me so vile that it challenges me in how to talk about it too.
It is interesting then that to contradict myself a little bit, maybe, but I promise it will make sense. if this game believes in anything, it is then to... One should think like a cop.
Yeah.
I think this is what... If there's any message based on the story that it's telling, this is the message.
Yeah.
Because Max never stops thinking like a cop in any way, shape, or form. However, to me, thinking like a cop is a fascistic mode of thinking. And we'll get into that maybe another time. But fascistic thinking is always corrosive. It's always destructive, which leads, and when we destroy everything, there's nothing left. So for me, thinking like a cop on the ladder of thinking eventually always leads. All roads of fascistic thinking leads to nothingness, is what I'm trying to say here. So thinking like a cop, if you believe in that, you probably, by the result of the of this product, is to believe in nothing. Is to, you know, because that's the problem, kind of. The ending of this game is so fucking flippant. Like, I'll reiterate, it's no societal change is needed, no reflection is required, just punishing evil people, and society is good now, or at least good enough.
Yeah.
And that's nothing. That's nothing. I'm sorry. That is destructive, corrosive. It doesn't really properly get into evil, as in they use a very banal depictions of it, as in, oh, organ harvesting, that's evil, that's horrifying, right? And it is. It absolutely is. It's also one of those things that's often put on Latin America as if it doesn't happen in other parts of the world.
Oh, yeah.
This is interesting. I don't have time for that. It uses these, the corrupt politician, it uses these like trademarks of evil so that we can kind of understand, oh, this is evil, which is, I hate to say it, but that's just pure ideology. it's not good, man. It doesn't really properly interact with that, and can't, because it denies any social commentary. It denies any social thinking, any sociological approach, and so forth and so on. So, yeah, which, once again, I kind of stress enough, render this game both ineffective and offensive.
There's a few things I want to add that I one which we spoken of while we're playing the game, and another which occurred to me. So I'll go with the latter first, because it'll help a little bit. The large sense is that Max Payne 3 is hostile to its audience, to the player in a sense, with its conveying message and ideas, and as such, you know, like. Because we're not just, you know, at least me in a more traditional sense, because that's literally what I'm doing with my MA. We're academics, but more than academics, we're political. So, yeah, no, Max Payne gets no benefit of the doubt. We're going to be hostile towards it, which is how I feel unapologetic about it. Like, there's such hostility coming from the game that's like, fair enough, let me bring it on too. But what I wanted to add, because you mentioned that Max Payne 3 believes and Max is a cop, and I feel like it's precisely that, because Max Payne, the character supposedly, was or is also like a detective thingy. But in this game, at least, he's no detective. He does no searching, no investigation or anything. He is just the shooting, he's just the cop. And I'll go further with that, because there's something really, really amusing in this game, which, again, I cannot believe it's intentional. But you find clues in the missions, which are little collectibles. It's like, oh, I'll give you some more information or certain characters or whatever, or it's an odd little encounter with a person here. But they're not really clues. They're not clues to anything, because it's usually like, oh, this person was kidnapped. Oh, here's a picture of them as a target. It's like, that's not a clue. That's nothing. That's maybe evidence, but even then it's like, what? Which leads to the fantasy that, like, oh, Max Payne is a detective or whatever. No, it's like, he's the last person to find anything out in this game. He's not paying attention. He's not doing anything. He's basically killing people. And yet he emerges at the end as the sole surviving hero, kinda? The American hero. And again with the hostility, I was like, the only recourse that I'm left with after all that is fuck you, game. Pretty redundantly and unapologetically. Because it's got nothing. It's got nothing. It is hostile to everyone, I think. Like, it doesn't offer much. Even its mechanics, so it's like, oh, it's a bullet time or whatever. Yeah, but sometimes the combat is so brutal that you can't do the flashy, showy, jumping, slow motion shooting. So it's like, yeah, the main mechanic, which is supposed to be the cool thing, yeah, that's actually counterintuitive to you enjoying the game and playing through the game and completing the game. So, bad, offensive, ineffective, horrendous, evil.
I agree. It's really funny because, well, I feel the exact same way. Let me just say that. I do think that as a last conceptualization, I'm so sorry to
take your time.
But I often talk about how good games for me sit at the intersection of the personal, the psychological, and the sociological. And someone might be like, oh, well, why didn't you mention that when you talk about good art? Well, for me, this is a very, very unflattering way to phrase it, dear listener. I'm so sorry. But for me, I still would stick with the thing that I said earlier about, like, it needs to communicate an elevated, it needs to communicate in a way that elevates the ideas and things it wants to talk about, yeah. Wants to communicate, once again. And that can be done by pushing that idea, that elevated idea, through the spectrum of the personal, psychological, and sociological.
Yes.
For me, it does have, that needs those three things. So I would structure that more as a filter of intent rather than an element unto itself, because that would mean it would be very singular, whereas those those things, psychological, sociological, et cetera, can be very diverse by its very definition. That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
But those are elements that you can use to construct and the facilitation of these elevated ideas. Elevated ideas sounds very 1800s German ideology. I'm so sorry.
I wasn't gonna say it.
Maybe I'll. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna. Once again, I will try and. But yeah, elevation for me, I like I said earlier, I mean that more in a sense of meaningfully partaking within the tradition of art, and that's why, you know, that's where the elevatedness for me comes from, or the elevation, I should say. Anyway, that's just something I wanted to, because I talk about the personal, psychological, and sociological a lot, so I will as a preview as to how I'm going to try and sketch it out. Later on, as I will write all this out, I very enjoyably asked a couple people what they thought were bad games, or what makes a bad game, and I would like to cap off with that, just as a fun little you know.
Can I just add one thing before we get to that?
Totally.
I think it's interesting then, because you mentioned the psychological, and I thought about this earlier, right? Because take God of War Ragnarok, for example. We have contentions, we have issues with it. There are things about it that don't work as well, oppose itself, contradict its own functioning, etc., etc. And yet, is it, even in the things that are that make it bad or that aren't as good about it, are still miles away from anything like Max Payne? Because while, yeah, it is way too focused on psychological narrative and an individual, mostly, or a few individuals' narrative over a collective one. All the same,
precisely,
it's still effective in what it's doing, right? It's telling a reasonably interesting story about father and son, and this intertwining with Nordic mythology broadly, and adapting it in a way that is not as obvious, I suppose. And is playing around with this a bit, and, you know, creating a fun video game at the end. mostly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have issues with that. We would like it to do more. We'd like it to go in other directions. But it's still working in a certain sense. Whereas Max Payne 3 seems to collapse at every turn. Collapse into a dark, violent void of hatred.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. That's exactly what I was going to say when you thought when you brought up God of War Ragnarok, because it so sincerely interacts with the personal and psychological that it blocks out anything else. So that's like an interesting drawback of it all, I think, and something we should always be very conscious and maintain.
Yeah.
Whilst and that's what I kind of tried to emphasize earlier as well with. Shoot for the stars, and if you only get halfway there, then you know I still respect God of War Ragnarok at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I have zero respect for Max Payne, as you were saying. So despite it then having that conceptual flaw, there's still meaningfulness, there's still sincerity in that game, there's still a focus. It believes in something as well. And I think that these are all things that are very close to each other and flow over to each other and talk to each other and blah, 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 and so forth and so on. And I maybe should like use them a bit more focused. But at the same time, that's the beauty of art. It is much like humans. And another thing that I say constantly, I'm so sorry, dear listener, but it is an endlessly protean thing. And I think that art can change and be more meaningful and less meaningful over time, depending on our postmodern relation to it. But I think then, to enter in once again back into the more objective way, Max Payne 3 will never be meaningful to me.
Exactly.
Because, once again, it's so contaminated, and I don't like that word, once again, but it's so contaminated by its offensiveness and also, therefore, its ineffectiveness. This is not an A-B relationship, but once again, this will... I hope it will be clear later on. Don't worry about it, listener. But that's all to say that we very agree on all this, which is good. I'm happy about that.
For sure.
Was there anything else?
No, I think that's kind of what I wanted to get across. I'm happy. There are other things to talk about Max Payne and even the portrayal of Brazil. There's a lot that I didn't get to with this odd mix of São Paulo and Rio that none of it's real. Yeah. It's all fake. It's all simulacrum, but that it's still...
distilled Brazilian identity.
there's no such thing. I'll argue. But that's a
well,
longer,
yeah, precisely.
That's a longer conversation for another day. But again, I felt, as you put it, that the offensiveness of it, the hatred of it, blotted out everything else. So I had to dig into that first. So...
No, totally.
Now we can begin our work.
Well, once again, they think they can distill the Brazilian identity into set dressing or something. Like it's really gross. It's a very scary, odd conceptual meat grinder, if you will.
Quite.
And I agree. Like you can't distill. Like there's no such thing as a Dutch person to me. Like as our queen said, who. who is related to the Argentinian dictator, but don't worry about that.
Oh, no.
Our queen said, de Nederlander bestaat niet, which means the Dutch person doesn't exist, as in we are very diverse people. And if that goes for like a small country with 18 million people, it definitely goes for Brazil, the second largest country in the Americas. So, you know, it's with population, I mean, then. Like Canada is bigger, yeah, but not really. It's shut up. And it's... anyway, so I've reached out to some friends of ours who emboldened me with this little theory thing that we've been doing here. Because they stumbled upon... They mentioned a couple of things that are... conceptually close to what we have been saying. I would first go into the answer of good friend Holly that has been on the podcast as well, and our gamer in Gollum, if you will. not our sister in Christ, but our gamer in Gollum, because she was also there. I believe I already said that this episode, I'm so sorry, but she said, I think a failure, when I asked her like what makes a video game bad, she said, I think a failure to make the player feel involved In this sense, visual novel games are much closer to audiobooks than they are games. One of my biggest peeves is giving the player the illusion of their choices mattering, and then taking any kind of agency away. Because it's like, what's the point? Boiling down to pure mechanics, it's a boring and dull gameplay loop. Doing things doesn't give you enough of a reward or incentive to do it again. Some of these things can be counterbalanced by others, though, i.e. great mechanics but terrible writing. Or great writing but terrible mechanics. Everyone going to have a different tolerance for both. So I think that's a very salient point. I then talked a little bit about like how I see good art, as I did in this episode. I said, like, oh, I think when a game is offensive, like Max Payne is to Brazil, for instance, it literally makes me feel bad playing it. And we touch upon the same thing. When choices are propped up as relevant, but aren't, this renders this element of a game ineffective, and this engages you from the art. Therefore, art bad. I said it as such because, you know, that's just how Holly and I talk very stupidly to each other. But I thought it was funny that Holly did also touch upon this ineffectiveness. Only she, like, you know, talked about how choice is not mattering. This engages her from the game. Sorry, go on.
I'm going to have to forcibly put a pin on that, because whenever we get to talking about Kentucky Route Zero, we're going to have to talk about choices again. But in a way that it's actually, I think, going to exercise that other demon of, you know, when the game gives you choices, but none of these choices really matter. The outcome's always the same. And yeah. And, you know, the way Telltale did a lot of it, of its supposed choices. We're going to get back to that. Don't you worry. If you're interested in that kind of discussion, because I am too, there'll be more of that eventually.
I'm a bit more tolerant toward Telltale, because I think it's very honest in, like, trying to tailor its way into choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they literally say. And they never promise to have a unique experience for everybody, which is, like, something the idiotic gamer base of people like made it into. But anyway, that's not here or there. I always saw them as interactive comic books to me, but we'll talk about that another time. Also ask our fellow diver in democracy, Nate.
Longtime listener and supporter. We'll add, thank you so much, Nate.
I was going to say that. and he said, I feel like there are so many flavors of bad video games, like, you know, like we talked about as well. One aspect that comes to mind for me that I've actively disliked in the past usually has to do with mechanics that feel actively bad, punishing to engage with. So it's really funny that he also talks about disengagement, engagement.
Yeah.
And therefore, I felt a bit more justified in what we're doing. And goes on that, like, narratively, I think a lot of what makes a video game bad would be broadly similar to what makes a plot or in a book or film bad. Characters lacking motivations, not believing in anything, for instance, or having incoherent motivations that don't match up with the surrounding situations. Maybe specifically video game issue is gameplay mechanics, and then he goes on to talk about the technical and the conceptual, as we have been talking about as well. So it was really funny that two people that we've been talking to and listening to our podcast, and in Holly's case even been on here, shared our observation of the outskirts of badness,
yes,
if you will.
Yeah, no.
So sure. I thought that was really funny and worth mentioning, and I don't know, I just kind of want to say that for the end as a little shout out to those good friends. So
no, for yeah. Sure. And I think it's interesting because it is in a way also what we've been talking about, because it is that hostility, right? Like, it's you don't necessarily want the cultural object that you're engaging with to feel uninteresting, to feel that's like, yeah, you don't matter as a player or as a reader, to the point it's like to push you away from it. I suppose the optimum counter example to what I'm saying would be Mr. Be Gone, a past episode with Horror, Vanguard, and Labor Kyle, about a book that screams at you to not read it. but that is exactly why you want to read it. Exactly. It's that point, right? Like, you want to be involved with that for however amount of time or moments or experience that you want to have with it. But if you feel like it's unimportant, or that, you know, you're not going to get out of this, or it's just going to work against you in any way that you conceptualize that mechanically, narratively, etc., then, you know, it's the first thing is that you have to find some reason to engage with that. But if not even that, then then you're failing at the first hurdle. Then you're not even shooting at for not even the moon, not even shooting for a mile away.
that's a great point. I forgot one bit. I'm so sorry. But it once again, it's perfect. Because Nate also said, along those character motivation issues, I think one specifically interesting problem video games as a medium can run into that other media don't is player choice. For example, if the character I'm controlling is presented with narrative choices that all feel incongruent with how I've played the character up to that point in that game, it can really take me out of the story and experience and cause me to not want to continue to engage as fully as it feels disingenuous. So not only do we have like a comparison between Holly and Nate, but we also have the mentioning of like disingenuous or like not being sincere and so forth and so on. So I do think there's something there, which is, you know, this is a bare bones data set. I will be the first to admit that. But I thought it was really funny that there is a requirement for meaningfulness. Yes. That's what I'm trying to indicate here by talking about these two answers to my question, to my very purposefully vague question. In the hopes that people would indeed be like, what the fuck does that mean? I'm just going to give an example because it's exactly what I wanted. Anyway, so yeah, thank you so much, Nate and Holly.
Yeah, thank you, Nate.
Yeah. And thank you so much for making it all the way to the end of this episode, dear listener. Stay tuned if this is interesting to you, I guess.
Yeah, no, this will definitely come up again.
Please follow us on Patreon. You don't have to support us, but it would also be great if you just follow us on Patreon. Because that's just going to be like the main thing where I'm going to post our stuff. We are going to post our stuff.
Yeah.
And communicate to us on social media. Twitter, Blue Sky, or join our Discord if you want.
Feel free
to. No pressure.
We're welcoming kindly folk.
Yeah. I like to think so. Anyway, but yeah, we would love to. Do you feel differently? Let us know.
No, oh, please. I don't know.
So yeah, I won't plug anything because I just did that. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Quando não é você que começa a brigar, também nunca ande de cabeça baixa, bem danado. Pois nem tudo que cai do céu é sagrado. Pois nem tudo que cai do céu é sagrado. Para que este vaza, deixa a praia descoberta. Uma onda vai, outra onda vem. Não fique triste, que seu amor pode vir também. Não fique triste, que seu amor pode vir também. Aí então você vai me dizer se eu tenho razão, sim ou não. Pois é por experiência própria que eu perdoei o meu coração. Infeliz no jogo, feliz no amor. Saúde e felicidade, nada e vender. E se a reza é forte, você vai ver. E amanhã um lindo dia vai nascer. E amanhã um lindo dia vai nascer.